stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'll be using the show to begin a celebration of the 10th anniversary of the West Coast Black Theater Troupe in Sarasota, Florida. I'll be playing the first half of an extraordinary interview with Nate Jacobs, founder and guru, and an interview with a young woman who is part of the troupe, who's been part of Nate's life and working with him since she was 5. Hang on, here come the show. The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about discovering who, finding who you really are, and then becoming it. I always say, we think that we know who we are. We think that the person that we're demonstrating, presenting to the world, is all there is to us. But pretty much it's not true. Pretty much there's a lot to us that we are in some ways the last one to know. Usually I spend some portion of this show talking about the kinds of things that stop us from knowing who we are. And I will continue to do that in the future, but today I'm dedicating the show, and also next week's show, to a celebration of the 10th anniversary of the West Coast Black Theater Troupe. And it's particularly appropriate that I'm beginning with the first half of Nate Jacobs' interview. Nate is the founder, mover, shaker, guru, point person of the West Coast Black Theater Troupe. And what's so appropriate about my playing this interview on this show is that Nate is a living, breathing example of a man who was literally the last one to know who he was. And in this, the first half of the interview that I did with him, you'll hear what happened to him. He was extraordinarily lucky because people kept saying to him, no, we see this in you. No, don't you get it? You can really do this. This is really who you are. And even though he kept saying no, or to quote him, he kept thinking, oh, they're just being nice, it was who he really was. And eventually he came to accept that, to integrate those parts of himself into his version of himself, and to use the extraordinary parts of himself which he had been in denial for to benefit not only his own life but the lives of dozens and dozens of children, and to enhance the life of the Sarasota community with his theater troupe. So in this first half, you're going to hear how he came to discover who he really was and how he began to put that into practice. And then next week, I'm going to play the last half of the interview where you can hear how that really happened. After the first half of my interview with Nate, I'm playing an interview with Zadik Porter. Zadik is a 26-year-old young woman who is part of the West Coast Black Theater Troupe. And as you will hear her say, she began to work with Nate when she was 5 years old, when he was teaching in the school run by her parents, Cynthia and Reverend Porter. And they are two of the people primarily instrumental in helping Nate discover himself, so it is perfectly appropriate that he turned around and helped their daughter become who she is. And in the same time, dozens of children. In between the two interviews, I'm going to play a cut from a CD that I have of a musical that both Nate and Zadik were in. And this particular tune spotlights both of them. The song is called One Small Girl, and you will hear both Nate and Zadik singing. So here, to begin the first half of my amazing interview with the dynamic, the funny, the remarkable Nate Jacobs. Okay, so I am sitting here with Nate Jacobs, who is the, do you call
founding
yourself? Founding Artistic Director.
Of West Coast Black Theater Troupe.
Of West Coast Black Theater Troupe. Nate and I have not actually officially met.
Right.
But I'm a fan of the troupe. I have.
Well, great.
Yeah.
Glad to hear that.
I have not explained to Nate what I'm doing, so I'm going to explain it to him so he'll know. I do a series of interviews called Anatomy of an Artist.
Oh.
And I've been interviewing artists, which is to say people who make their living or their life with their art.
Oh.
Yes, you. I know he's pointing to himself, and I know it's you. Right? Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I know.
I'm one of those crazy people.
I know it's a mixed blessing.
Right.
I know it is. So mostly what I want to know is how this happened to you.
I like that.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, how did you become this?
I've always been interested in some form of art. When I was a kid, I was one of those kids that doodled and sketched and all the time. And I remember my mother one time, I drew a little picture out of a magazine, and she said, "Well, that's good." When I got into high school, in my art classes, the art teacher was always coming over, looking over my shoulder and saying, "You are really good."
Wow.
So I said, "Well, I guess this is what I'm good at," because nobody else was saying, "You're really good at anything else." So I focused in on this visual arts. The next thing was singing. I remember overhearing my grandmother tell my mother in the house one day, they didn't know I was in the other room, and she said, "You need to come in here and Nate sing in the youth choir. He's really good."
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, my grandmother think I'm really good at singing? And it just really opened my mind, because other people were telling me that you have a nice voice. I, for some reason, it went in one ear and out of the other, because I didn't know what I felt about being able to sing. It really had no real importance to me.
Wow.
The gift was there, and I just had no... it had no significance to me at the time.
It didn't seem special.
It didn't seem special.
Yeah.
But when my grandmother overheard my grandmother, that's the first iota of me feeling like, well, I may have something on top of my other nine brothers that could be...
You have nine brothers?
Nine brothers and one sister.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Where are you in the...
I'm the fourth oldest. And so I was the caretaker of most of them under me.
Under you.
Yeah, I was the one that was home most of that whole school period when all of us was in school.
There were 10 of you?
11.
There were 11 of you.
It still is 11.
That, Yes. Oh, my God, that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And amazing.
And fairly young. I mean, my oldest brother is 52.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the baby?
Randy is 30, maybe. I can't remember.
Oh, my God, in 20 years, your mother had 11 kids?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That was her career.
Yeah, no kidding. That was what she did well.
And she was very good at it. Yeah,
yeah, well, clearly.
So,
Well, but this is interesting because are any of the others of them artistic or musical or theatrical or?
My oldest brother sang. He's a lawyer. But when he was in school, he was a part of a band. Mm-hmm. His hobby was singing. And we knew about it because every now and again, the band would come through Daytona Beach and perform. But he sang, so that was his thing. My brother who's right over me, Michael, who we're the closest pretty much in the bunch, he's a lawyer in D.C., but his hobby was theater. So that was my first real impact with live, real live theater. Now, when we come home for breaks or at the church during Easter and Christmas, my brother was recruited, Michael, the one older than me, to participate in the planning, and he would pull me in because of my artistic ability to draw sets, pieces. So I began to develop a small passion, but, you know, it was just my brother asking me, the church asking me to be involved. When the play was over, I thought I'd throw it over my shoulder. My freshman year at Florida A&M University, where my brother was graduating from, Michael, and he was the president of the drama club.
This is so funny because it sounds like this wasn't your idea in a way.
Girl, you didn't say that. That's not a small saying. And it really wasn't. That's just really how my life evolved into this. I'm sitting in meetings after class.
I have to say that because I see you in this, and it's so much you. I mean, I've seen you on stage in lots of things, and I've seen you introduce stuff. I mean, it's so clearly all of you. It's so funny to hear that you fell in it.
Right. I should have been a theater major, but who knew?
Yeah, you weren't.
The thing to me was drawing and painting.
Oh,
that's
my
what
gosh.
Seemed, like I said, to be special. Not enough people had focused on my singing yet. So when I went to college, I said, well, I'm an art major.
Really?
You know, so there I am majoring in art. My brother got me sitting in these drama meetings. He actually performed in a couple of shows. So I went to see more live theater I'd ever seen in my life. They had a wonderful theater department, and still do, at Florida A&M University. So I'm sitting, and one night, they have a little party. They have a gong show or whatever. Everybody has to do something in the room. So Nate, get up and do something. So I get up, and I begin to just elaborate this comical story.
Improv.
I went on and on and on, and 30, 40 minutes later, I finish.
And there's a stunned silence.
And everybody is
right.
Stunned.
All right.
And they're looking. And so one girl says to me, you did not just make that up. And I said, yeah. Because I'm thinking everybody does that.
Yeah.
And she said, boy, do you know you had us laughing straight for like 40 minutes? She said, Nate, people can't do that. Everybody can't do that. And everybody else was just like, yeah, wow. That was.
And so again, you're thinking, oh, maybe I have something here.
Right, exactly. Because it was very evident they were all blown away. And it was a big surprise to me. Well, next thing I know, I was invited to every little college social, especially if it had anything to do with the theater department.
Yeah.
And they had me up doing these stories, which was born out of that, the Unrudale show that I do.
I saw it.
Well, that's where it was born.
Oh, my God.
Standing before a group of college kids, just me, myself, and I.
Are you
and
serious?
And just starting. I start knocking on a dashboard. We were sitting on a van. And I start saying, shut up, Hubbard. I'm not talking to you. And it went on. And these people were falling out. So I began to be invited to every banquet. And I was wondering why these people invited me. But when I would get up and do this little silly story, people would fall out. And I still didn't quite get it.
It's like the universe kept saying, get it. Get it. And you're saying, get what?
Well, I was so sure, Lynn, that I was an introvert. And this was not for me. I was too shy. And I couldn't do this. I was just too shy. Now, all the while I'm up, in front of groups of people doing stuff, But I didn't look at it like that when I was in performance mode.
No.
I was looking at myself as how I interpreted Nate Jacobs, which was introverted and shy. Well, the next thing that happened...
So there's somebody else living inside.
Yeah. I end up... This is my senior... No, my junior year. My brother's gone now to law school, and I'm there, and I have a couple other brothers there, but now I'm taking a theater class. So I begin to venture into the department, because so many people... I thought I'll take a couple of classes. I'm still an art major, fine arts major. I'm in the class... This is a production class I'm in. I get assigned as the prop master. So I'm riding around over Tallahassee with people finding props for this show. Well, I come to rehearsal one night, and the director comes over to me and said, here, he hands me this script. He said, I want you to look at this role. He had this stuff highlighted with a yellow highlighter. He said, go home and look over this role. He said, I want to see what you sound like saying this role. And, you know, I was a good student, so I took the book home, and to
me... You were a good boy.
Yeah. To me, it meant learn it, because I thought that's what you do when you do theater. Mm-hmm. So I went home, and I learned the role. When I came back for the next night, and he called me to the stage with his book, he says, did you get yours? I said, yeah, I learned it. Mm-hmm. He said, you learned it? I said, yes. He said, you didn't go home and study and learn. I said, yeah, I thought that's what you meant. He said, no, I would never tell you to do that. He said, you went home and learned the role. I said, yes. He put me on the stage. I knew the role verbatim. Oh. And he said in the audience, he said to me, he said, you are a natural. He said, you have blown my mind to go home and learn this. And it was a major role. It was like five characters, and this was one of the major characters, a young kid of this family. I ended up getting the role.
No kidding.
He fired the guy that was cast and gave me the role. So I'm just being, because this is a class.
Right.
I do the role. Next thing I know, I'm offered another role. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, now go get to happiness. I'm in the art department. Now, all the while, I'm in the Concert Chorale on campus, and they ended up deciding they're going to do a collaborative project with the theater department. I'm in another play, Lost in the Stars, this big musical.
Yeah.
That's three shows now, and I'm in front of the whole school. People come to me and go, oh, you're so talented. And I'm listening to it, but I'm like, I'm an artist. I'm not an actor. Okay, I graduate from school. I've done these three shows, and I have my little theater experience. And I remember the head of the theater department. The last thing I remember her saying to me, you should have been a theater major. I thought to myself, yeah, what do you know? I leave Tallahassee because I'm invited to come to Sarasota to work with Dr. Henry and Cynthia Porter's private school, West Coast School for Human Development, as the art teacher. So I come with my new degree, and I'm teaching these kids. They have almost 70, 80 kids in this private school, and I'm the art teacher. Well, when I get into school, I'm doing art classes, but I'm noticing these kids love to be up and doing things, expressing themselves. So this little thing inside of me clicks in. Mm-hmm. Next thing I know, I find myself writing original little musicals and plays, and I'm putting these plays on and musicals. Then the wife comes to me and goes like, you know, you're really good. Do you notice that when you do stuff, this place is like standing room only? They have parents, grandparents. I noticed they come see the show, but I thought they come to everything like that. Still can't get it.
No.
So finally, the husband comes after years, about 5 or 6 years of doing these kind of shows. He said, Nate, you know, you're really good. You need to do this outside of the walls of this school. He said, no, you're really good. He said, I know you think you're just doing it because you're teaching the kids and giving them an experience. He said, but you are a gifted artist, and you're really good at this. I thought to myself, he's just trying to be nice. What happens is that I have now begun acting in the community because the wife is a trained actress from Carnegie Mellon, Cynthia Porter. She is involved in the theater community. She comes to me one day while I'm in school, and she said, I want to introduce you to the theater community. She said, you're natural. She said, I see you working with kids.
You know, what's so funny to me about this is wherever you go, there are people saying, Do that. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like the last one to know somehow.
Right. I have this image of myself in my head.
Yeah, right.
And I thought I knew who I was. So when these people were interpreting to me who they saw the real me.
Yeah.
But she was sure. This woman was Carnegie Mellon trained, and most of the actors in television from that school. She was an amazingly smart woman. And when she came to me, she was very, she said, you may not be interested in this, she said, but I'm going to tell you what you are. She said, Nate, you are a natural actor. She said, what that means is that you don't necessarily have to go for any real training. She said, training would be wonderful. She said, but you have the natural gift of acting. She said, I saw you the other day doing a story for the kids, and you were amazing. Now, she was sitting in the back while I was doing this story. I didn't know she was even in the room. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'd like to introduce you to the community. Next thing I know, we were at the Oslo, and I was meeting the artistic director, John Ulmer, who was at the time. I didn't know they was auditioning for a role. What she said was that, John, I just want you to hear him. I think he's so talented. So I get this script, and he said, read this part. So I read this part, and he says, after we finish, he asked me a couple of more questions, had me do a couple of more things, and he says, how would you like to be a part of my cast for The Little Foxes?
Oh, my God.
And I looked at her because I was going, I'm not coming to be a part.
You didn't know you were?
I didn't know I was auditioning for a show. And she knew I didn't know.
Yeah,
she was.
Right,
that was her
right,
way.
Right. Little
She said,
we're not talking here a musical.
Right.
This is a serious play.
Serious straight play. And she says to him, he'd love it. So he said, well, I want to give you the role.
I love this story.
Well, I'm cast in this show. It's my first show in Sarasota. The show runs almost 2.5 months. In repertory, I believe, mm-hmm. back then. It's old theater, old Oslo, back by the water that used to be back there. And all of a sudden, people begin to know who I am because the director, and they say, you know, you have taken on this role. And he said, every night you come out, you are different, you bring something fresh. And I'm thinking to myself, this man really know who you're talking about? But it was him. It was this actress from the soap opera, The Doctors, who played the lead, the lead sister in The Little Foxes. She came to me, she said, I watch you. She said, you're very observative, and you're picking up wonderful stuff, she said, and you are going to be an excellent actor one day. She said, but just take your time and get your skills down. Uh-huh. So there I was, all of a sudden enveloped into the theater community. Everybody embraced me. I was Nate Jacobs, the actor. I went from there to the Players, from the Players to the Golden Apple, and I began to be one of the most known African-American actors in the community. Everybody, when they needed an African-American for whatever, they would give me a call. After I did this for like 4 years or so, I began to notice the extreme lack of diversity. It just hit me one day.
You mean you play in the same role? Is that what you mean?
Me playing the same type of role.
Yeah, right.
The lack of diversity in the audiences that were coming to see our shows.
Oh.
Or the cast. It was like me and Cynthia,
you.
The other woman who was, she was actually already cast in the show when she took me to the audition. We had the only two black roles in the show. It hit me one day in rehearsal, and I remember standing on stage in rehearsal. The director was standing here, and I said, John. I said, why aren't there any blacks in the theater here? So you know what, Nate? We're wondering the same thing. He said, that's the most mysterious thing about this city. He said, African Americans don't involve themselves into the culture community. And I just said, and myself, I said, that's weird. I went on back to being an actor. That was pretty much it for me. It was just a curiosity. I wanted to know the answer to the question. But as time grew, this thing began to grow inside of me. This mystery of why. Then it began to grow into a more thing like, wow, something is wrong with that.
Yeah.
Cynthia now had pretty much stopped acting, and I became more prominent than her now. Now everybody knows Nate Jacobs. I began to do a lot of cabaret musical stuff with Florida Studio. So a lot of people began to know me even more with the musical stuff. And this thing kept growing. I was trying to subdue it. Then finally, I began to voice it. I went to my mentor, her husband, Dr. Porter, and I said, you know, something really wrong about Sarah, so they need to be more diverse in the theater thing. And so one night I was talking. He said, he was sitting listening. He was just quiet. And I was just going on, blah, 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 blah. I finished. He said, you know what, Nate? He said, you know, that's probably why you're here.
Yeah.
He said, you have probably been sent to this city to bring diversity in the arts community. He said, because I can't see why you can't. I thought to myself, he just tried to be nice.
Nice.
So he said, I can't see why you can't have your own theater company here. And I said, he must not know about the community that I'm working in. They wouldn't accept anything like that. I went on down, still acting.
But it's the same thing over and over again.
The same thing.
It's amazing.
This thing keep trying to get me to answer the call.
That's right. You're going, not me? What?
Alongside of me teaching when I'm in town, I had begun to tour nationally. I was actually beginning to tour quite a bit. I was very seldom in town. During the course of a year, I'd be gone like 8 months out of the year, pretty much, touring with a singing group, a gospel singing group. Nationally, we would go out of the country, Caribbean. And when I was in town, sometimes I would do shows. The thing never left. I'm touring, I'm singing, and I'm still thinking about this. Well, I come off a tour. I get a call. It's the Players Theater. And this guy said, I'm the interim executive director at the Players, Michael Judson, and I want to talk to you. I went into the meeting. He said, everybody in town keeps telling me that you're interested in diversifying the cultural community. You want to do some black shows in town. I was like, yes. He said, well, we want to work with you to help you do that. We're at the community. We want to. He said, I, while I'm here, want to institute some kind of program. He said, it'll be special away from what we regularly do, but what I want to do is do some black shows. I want to apply for a grant, and if you would help me defend this grant for this program, then we can do it. I said, sure. We worked on the grant. We went and defended. We got the grant. We did Amen Corner. He comes back to me. He said, I went to the board of this theater company, and they said that they feel very uneasy about doing this. It's never been done at the Players Theater. If this does not come off successful,
they're not going to do
it. They will never approve it again. But they're going to let you do this with this time. So he was in the box office. I was working. I went into the, okay, here I am now, Nate Jacobs. I'm doing my first black show. This thing that I've been dreaming and talking to everybody about. Okay, it's Nate Jacobs. It's a script and it's a grant. Where am I going to get actors from? How am I going to get this whole ball to turning? So I went into the community. The black community. I took flyers. I told people I was doing this play. Before it was all said and done, I had about 30 people.
Auditioning?
Yes.
Wow.
Now, in the meeting, production meeting, before I went into auditioning for this show, I met with this whole staff of people. This gentleman asked me, he said...
You mean at the Players?
At the Players. Their production team.
Right.
Nate, how do you think you're going to pull this off? He said, how big is the casting strength? 20-some people. He said, you'll never...
Oh,
get 20 people to do. He said, we can't get two African-Americans to walk through a door in an audition in this city anywhere. He said, it just doesn't make sense. Nate, you're not going to be able to do it.
Oh.
And so I said, well, you're not me. I said, I feel I can do it. And so the executive director, the producer said, do you really feel that this can happen, Nate? I said, yes. He said, then we're doing it. He said, I'm banking everything on you. And so the guy just sat back in his seat. So I'm out here finding people. All of a sudden, we got 30 people. Long story short, the show comes together. The box office looks strange. wait a minute. We're accustomed to people calling with credit cards and giving reservations, and this ain't happening. We don't see African Americans doing that. I say, okay, you said you want to do new programming.
Right.
New audience.
Right.
New theater. You got a new audience.
Right.
They're responding in a new way.
That's right.
I said, they're not going to do the credit card. I said, they're going to walk up the
with
night
money.
Of the show with money and buy the tickets. He said, well, I've never done that before, and I don't really know if that's going to work. And the night of the performance, opening night, he and I had these words in the lobby, and I told him, the last words I said to him, you asked me to do my job, I did it. I said, not only did I do my job, I said, I'm an actor in this show. I'm leaving this lobby, I'm going to the dressing room, put on my costume and get ready for the performance. I said, you deal with everything else. I said, because you said you were going to handle that. The show packed out. They had to put a sold out sign in the window of the Players Theater because they couldn't fit anybody else in the theater. First diverse, real diverse audience in Sarasota. He, the board, and me were blown away.
Yeah.
He came to me after the show. Tears streaming down his face in the lobby, crying like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
He came out of the office and he was just crying, and I was trying to figure out what's wrong. He didn't like it. And he came to me and he said, you said it would happen. You said it would happen. You said it would happen. He said, this is the most amazing experience I've ever had. He said, I have managed a ballet company up north for 30 years, and I came to this theater. I have never seen anything like this in my entire career.
Wow.
It was just another evidence from the universe talking to
do
me.
Do this.
Now, the other thing that happened was my grandmother, my mother, and my oldest brother. Now, my oldest brother had been writing me 12-page letters since I graduated. You really shouldn't be donating your time at this school because you're really not being paid a real salary. What are you going to do with your life? You have an art degree. You already had limitations. You need to really plan. Maybe you want to go back to school.
Oh, this is the oldest brother, yes. Right?
When I saw the letter come in the mail, I thought to myself, oh. But my mother was putting heat fire under that.
Yeah.
What
right.
is he doing?
Right.
So between my mom. Well, it just so happened. Didn't even invite them to this show, man. I just knew they would say, no, I'm not coming. They really didn't like the fact that I was living in Sarasota. My mother was like, you shouldn't be there. You should be somewhere else. You should be up. She really wanted me in D.C. with my Michael. Right. And she thought, if you're black, you say you want to be an artist. Michael said he will help you. Why didn't you go to D.C.? What is Sarasota? We don't have no family there. So she was pretty much disgruntled the whole time I was here. And I knew I was dealing with that challenge. They called me the day before opening. A surprise picnic in Tampa. We want you to come. I go over, my whole family, my grandmother, my mother, my oldest brother, everybody's there. Before I left, I was married at the time, and my ex-wife said to me, are you going to invite your family to your play? I said, no, they're not coming. She said, but I think you should invite them anyway. We were at the car, leaving. I turned around, went back to the picnic table. They were sitting all around this table. I said, well, tomorrow night I'm opening a show in Sarasota, and I said, I'll leave some tickets if people want to come. And to my surprise, my mother said, I want to come. My grandmother said, well, if you go, I'm going. And then my mama said, we'll get Leon to drive us over to see the play. I said, okay, but I'll leave at least 5 tickets for people who want to come. I left. I said, they're not coming nowhere. I didn't even get no anticipation up. I didn't even know they were there until after the show, after the producer came to me crying. I passed him, and sitting in the lobby, I see my mom, I see my grandmother.
I have tears
in
my eyes.
And my oldest brother comes to me, and he's crying. And he says to me, you an artist. He said, I am so sorry. He said, I'm sorry. I didn't know. He said, we didn't know, Nate. He said, I cried the whole play. I didn't know if I even saw anything on the play. He said, when the lights came up, it's so evident to me who you are. He said, and I'm sorry about writing you. And my mother said, you are really good. My grandmother said, oh, I enjoyed it. So the three people that I needed.
That mattered the most. I know, I have tears.
So when I walked out of that theater that night, the thing came full circle to me.
Right.
And everything was brought together like that. We had 3 more performances, all 3 sold out. When I got to the last performance, I walked up to the theater and in the window it said sold out. My mentor came to me who told me you should start your own thing. And he said, he came on the stage after the audience had filed out and I was walking on stage. Kim pointed and said, he said, I told you, he said, you were good enough for this community. He said, when I saw you, I said you were good enough for this community. He said, you just had to believe it. He said, now, you had 500 people standing, giving you a standing ovation for the last 3 nights about your work that you thought was meant for my school. He said, Nate, you're bigger than that. So that was that experience. I was on the journey.
Yeah.
The first show was Amen Corner, James Baldwin's Amen Corner. Second show was A Raven in the Sun. We did Dream Girls, a community Dream Girls. We did, we did Pearly, which was beautiful. We did Bubbling Brown Sugar. Then all of a sudden, they didn't renew the grant. So I was back at step one with this whole vision. I remember the night of the closing show of that Pearly, which was the last show I did. And Michael Justin was still there this whole period. And he walked me to my car. He said, you know, Nate, I'm going to tell you this. He said, I'm going to tell you what I see. He said, you got a theater company in your hands. He said, I know this is probably something you want to hear. I said, Michael, please, don't forget it. I see all these people. He said, Nate, you've gone into this community, got these people who don't even know what live theater, and got all these folks stirred up about doing live theater. He said, those people are not just going to sit back on their heels. He said, those people really want to do this. He said, you got a theater company on your hand. We talked and kind of laughed about it in the parking lot. I got in my car and I left. So what happens over the next few months, because I'm trying now just put it back on the shelf. oh, that was nice. I did what I thought should happen. It's over. My phone began to ring. And these people were saying,
well, what are we doing now?
What are we doing now? Oh, and I'm talking and I'm hanging the phone up. So, but when it all comes to a head, I'm back at step one with the passion. The passion has come back. It's come back even at a greater, because now I know I can do it.
Yeah. Well, and you've got it. You actually have it.
Right.
You just have to use it.
Exactly.
So there you have the first half of my interview with the remarkable Ney Degas. And he brings us to the moment when he does, in fact, create the West Coast Black Theater Troupe. And next week, you'll hear the story of that creation. And as I think I said at the head of the show, we are celebrating the 10th anniversary of that event. And there will be a gala, celebratory dinner and performance on October 29th, at which I hope you all, well, I don't suppose all of you can come because some of you live very far away, but it would be worth the trip. Later in the program, or certainly next week, I will tell you where it will be, how much it will be, how to get tickets, all that stuff. But now, since I don't have a lot of time left in the show, I'm going to play One Small Girl, and you will hear singing Nate as the father, and Zadig Porter, daughter of Cynthia and Preacher, and protege of Nate. So here they are, Zadig and Nate, and One Small Girl.
Once on this island, there was a terrible storm. Many huts washed away. Many peasants drowned by Agwe's angry waters.
But one small girl got his attention.
And she was spared.
An orphan plucked from the flood by Agwe.
Sheltered in a tree by Asaka. And sent on a journey by the gods. A journey that would test the strength of love.
Against the power of death.
On this island are two different worlds.
The story of Timon.
Last night, she tried to blow our heads off.
Oh, Julian, just listen to the birds.
What kind of bird is that?
Look, there, one small face, two small knees.
Why are you up there?
What is your name?
Probably meant to kill her.
Then she'd be dead.
It's possible he forgot.
The gods don't forget.
Then they had some reason to spare her life. It's best that we don't know what. One small girl.
Better not.
But we are too old for children.
And we have no room and no food.
not knowing quite why, they followed their hearts back to the tree, gently lifted the terrified child down.
No!
And discovered she could speak after all.
One small hair
in their way,
constantly hungry,
learning too quick.
One small girl, hard as pain.
She makes me smile.
Oh, she scares me sick.
And they scolded and teased and held her and mended the clothes she tore.
And the hut was crowded and food was scarce, and somehow their lives held more.
God-given desire, but in their affection they called her simply Timur.
What does Timur mean, Mama?
It means little orphan, saved by the gods for something special.
What is it?
Oh, Timur, if we knew why the gods did the things they do, we would be gods ourselves.
So we are going to ask them, Mama.
Oh, sweeter than eucalyptus and terrible as a tempest, banging a drum and humming a tune. Timur. Falling and running and falling and growing and growing and growing and growing up too soon.
One small girl,
not so small,
lost in those daydreams,
day after day,
called her name.
No, don't call her, ears don't hear. She's far away,
and I know that she's getting older.
I know that it's meant to be,
and my arms can't hold her and keep her small, but all that my heart can see
is one small girl.
Okay, so here I am in the West Coast office with Zadig Porter. Is
yes.
that correct?
Yes, that is.
It is an unusual name. I know you know that.
Yes, I do.
And I imagine everybody asks you. You have to tell everybody how to pronounce
it. Yeah.
Where does it come from?
It's Hebrew. My father's a preacher, and it's in the Bible, and it means righteous.
Something to live up to.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
It's a challenge.
Yes.
Well, a preacher's daughter named Righteous,
mm-hmm.
who's in show business.
Yeah, crazy, huh?
Well, I don't think it's so crazy, but I do think it's not usual, you know? Mm-hmm. So tell me how this happened for you. And
it happened when I was about 18 months.
18 months old?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's when I started doing things in church. And I just basically love the stage. Like, mm-hmm. I love to be the center of attention. I was the only girl. So, of course, for me, it was my dad and my mom. Everybody kind of paid attention to me. Mm-hmm. So it was easy for me to kind of take the spotlight. But I started working with Nate when I was 5. He was a teacher at my school, West Coast School for Human Development. Yeah. And he gave me my first starring role. I was a little girl who was kind of mean. And
Wait a minute. The part was mean or you were mean?
The part was mean. Not me. But the part was very, like, she was a little brat and her dad gave her everything. And so it was not weird because a lot of people thought that my dad did give me a lot. He did give us a lot, but it wasn't, he never wanted us to be, you know.
He didn't spoil you.
No, not like that.
No, I can see it on your face.
No, so I did that part and then throughout.
How old were you when you did that?
I was 5.
My goodness.
Yeah. And throughout the time, Nate just groomed us. We went everywhere. We sang everything. My dad and the school, they took us around the world. You know, I've been to Africa. I've been to, you know, Europe. I did it all when I was like 12, 13. I was a young girl, not older.
Right.
And I sung many places, you know. We sung at the Pentagon with our school choir. So it's like we've been around.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when Nate decided to start the troupe, I was in high school, and we wanted to do this because this is what we had dreamed of, you know, coming up as little
kids. And trained for.
Yeah, coming up as little kids, it was like, oh my God, I just want my name in lights. And then finally, when the first season opened, it was six of us, and we could not believe we all grew up with each other, and we all knew each other. And the chemistry on stage and our blend was, like, dynamic.
Yes.
And people were just blown away by these teenagers, and people thought we were from New York, L.A. They were asking us after the shows, are you guys from L.A., New York? No, we're right here, right from Sarasota. And just to look over the years, because I was here at the beginning, to look at it where it's come to now, it's just like, it blows me away, because I was an actress in the troupe. I've been the general manager of the West Coast Black Theater Troupe. So I've done it all. I've kind of seen the inside, and I've seen the performing side. So as a performer, I'm, like, elated. And as somebody who worked for the troupe, I'm even happier because I see the strides that we've made.
Yeah. So you're coming up on your 10th year. How old are you now?
I'm 26.
Oh, my gosh. You may hear that Zay's little girl is in the background.
Yeah.
Cindy, she's reading, but she's reading aloud. So if you hear her, that's what it is.
That's what it is.
It's great. It's great. Okay, so what are you thinking about for your life and your future?
I want the world. I mean, that sounds really, I'm 26, but I still feel like I'm 18 again, and Nate's calling us in to do stuff. I mean, it makes me feel, like, great. I just want it all. I want to be on magazines. I want to be on TV. I want to do the albums. I just want to do it all.
So, okay, do you have a plan?
Right now, I'm finishing up school.
What are you taking?
I'm going to get my BFA in theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I get my BFA in theater, then I just want to maybe move to L.A. or New York. I'm not really sure. I'm not really a big New York person. I'm not really in a theater. I really want to be in the music industry and do television.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe L.A. for me. Mm-hmm. But I want to move out there and just, like, you know,
kick off.
Kick butt.
All right, 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 right. Okay, so where are you in school?
I am a junior, so.
One more year.
Mm-hmm.
And, L.A., here you come.
L.A., well, if it happens before then, if I get an opportunity before then, education is very important.
Oh, wait a second. I think we have, why don't I stop this and see what we need. So, we stopped to make sure that two-year-old Cindy had chips and juice.
Yes.
and I watched you care for her, and, I mean, that's a huge responsibility, a two-year-old.
It is. And a lot of people look at me and, like, they can't believe it. Because actually, when I was pregnant with her, I was working in the troops office, and I did not stop. I popped her out in November. We started rehearsals in January for Dreamgirls, and I was Dina Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And I came in rehearsals. Like, I never brought her, like, with me. We tried to always have a sitter for her, so I wouldn't, because she was really small, like an arm baby, a couple of months old. So during the show nights, because I was nursing, so during the show nights, I would be pumping before the shows. And I would be sitting backstage getting ready to get dressed, and I would pump the milk, and then my sitter would be out in the audience with her, because she would sleep, but she would want to see me. So she would sit up, and every time she heard my voice, the sitter said she just, like, went to sleep. So it's crazy, because, like, to have to manage everything, to, like, go back to school and try to finish, you know, and then have a two-year-old and then still pursue your career. For some people, it may be, like, overwhelming, but for me, I just take it as God gives us all things that we can bear and we can do, and we can do them great. And I just try to be the best mother I can. She knows that if she calls me, I'm always going to be there, but I also want to be a great performer. So I also give 110% when I'm on stage and when I'm in a rehearsal studio, and then, you know, anything else.
Wait a minute, wait a minute. She's saying help, help.
Help, yes, ma'am. Oh, your chip fell?
Okay. Well, all right.
It's a dirty chip. Yes, it is. Okay, Mommy will get it when we get done, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, you know, what I'm aware of is the really high level of energy that you've got. I mean, you know, it's not just that other people couldn't do this because they didn't have all the talent. Other people couldn't do this because they don't have the physical energy that you have.
Well, I mean, to me, I look at it as a blessing.
No kidding.
Because when I was growing up, we traveled a lot. So you couldn't kind of, Nate never took, I'm tired, as an excuse. Or, Nate, my voice is hurting, or, you know, anything like that. It could never be that. It was never that. It was always pushed through. So he wasn't doing like a taskmaster, but I think it showed us how the industry really would be.
Yes.
Because you can't, you know, if
you can't.
In the middle of a movie, you can't say, okay, I need to take 3 weeks off because I'm sick.
Right.
You have to work through it. So, I mean, as a mom, I just try to take my vitamins. I just try to, I exercise every day. I just try to do things that will keep me physically up to the task. Yes, I do get tired. Yes, at about 11 o'clock, if I'm not in a rehearsal or I'm not in a studio or I'm not on set, I am probably somewhere sleeping. But if I am on a set or am, you know, doing my work as far as my, you know, theater goes, I'm wide awake.
You're focused.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. It's really extraordinary. And it also speaks to the what the troupe can do. I mean, it could integrate the fact that you had a child, for example. You could, there was a place for you in the troupe even when you were pregnant.
Yes.
Right?
I was there from the beginning, and then I went off to school. Then my mom passed, so I had to come home because it was a lot to deal with for me.
Oh.
So when I came home, I wasn't sure what to do. I was distraught. When I found out I was pregnant, wow, I'm pregnant. I want to be a star. I'm pregnant. But then it was a blessing to me at the same time because I felt like I had just lost, you know, something huge, you know, and then to be given a gift. She never replaced my mom, but in my eyes, God gave me another gift and another soul to look after. And so when I found out I was pregnant, it was just like, okay, we take it, we do. I didn't stop performing. I didn't stop singing. I went to L.A. 5 months pregnant and sung on America's Got Talent stage with my brother. I didn't want to stop because I felt like when you stop doing what you're supposed to do and what God put you here to do, it's like, how do you start again? Like, you know, because then it's going to always be something. So I felt like I could not stop because if I stopped, then I couldn't be a whole person for my daughter because I know performing is me. So I just couldn't be, like, 100%.
I don't think there's anything that could stop you.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Well, you know, sometimes when you go through things in life, it makes you feel like maybe it isn't what you're supposed to do. But I knew when I looked at my, when I popped her out and I looked at her, I was like, I can't stop because I have to make it better for both of us, not just for her and not just for myself, but we're a team now, and I just have to make sure that our team is, you know, we're doing good.
Yeah.
So I just try to be a good mom. It makes me laugh because she embodies so much of me, but she also has traits of my mom. And it's just, it's hilarious because we'll be sitting and talking and my daughter will just say, and I'm like, where'd you get that from? I don't care if she's a performer, honestly. Like, my mom felt like whatever your lot in life is your lot in life. She was just like, whatever is in you will come out.
She sounds like she was a terrific woman.
She was. She was so cool. First part of my life, she was my mother.
Yes.
And I appreciate her for being that. But when I moved to Miami, my mom was like my sister, like I could call her. And I didn't have sisters. So it was hard for me sometimes when I was going through things that girls go through, you know, heartbreak. But I knew I could call my mom and be like, Mom, he didn't call me. And she would tell me, okay, well, you know what? Don't call him for a week. Leave him alone and he'll come back. It was just the little things that she would do. And it made me the person that I am, you know? That's why I appreciate Nate so much, because when through everything all of us has been through, I'm not the only person who's been through something in their life. Nate tells you, I understand that you may have things you're going to go through, but I want you to work. And he always pushes us to be the best people we can be. He doesn't want us, everybody, to be the same person. He doesn't want us to all fit in the same image. Competing with your friends, so you don't want to compete, but you have to because you still have to be the best performer you can be.
Yeah, and it sounds like even though it's a kind of a competition, everybody wants everybody to be the best they can be.
That's what it is. To me, Nate, he has been a very big influence in my life. He's a great person, and I'm happy to be a part of this movement. I want to go to L.A. and New York, but I know that when I come home, I always have a job.
Yeah, and you'll always have the family of the troupe.
Yeah. We all look out for each other. We're like brothers and sisters. We're family. Not only it's a professional environment, very professional. He makes sure that we are on time. We do our work. But when we're not working, we're all are making tight bonds that will last us lifetimes. Some of the friendships that I've made in the troupe, I made those when I was 5 years old at West Coast School.
I was just thinking that. I was thinking these are lifelong friendships.
Yeah, we all have respect for each other. We've built something that will last throughout the years.
I'm hungry.
Okay, we're gonna go. We're gonna stop. Okay. Thank you. This has been great, and thank you.
Can we go now?
Yes, you can go now. Is that because you're hungry?
Uh huh.
Yeah. Well, little girls need to eat when they're hungry, right?
We can go get cheeseburger.
Okay.
So that was Zadok Porter and Cynthia. I couldn't resist leaving that in. It's so amazing, and you know, you hear that Zadok began her career at 18 months old, and it's clear that little Cynthia is taken right after her mommy, yet another generation. And also you can hear the amazing sense of entitlement and courage and commitment in this young woman, and she attributes it to both her mother and father and Nate Jacobs. And next week you will hear an interview with yet another member of the troupe, Leon Pitts, and you will hear more of the gratitude that they feel for this extraordinary man who, having discovered who he really was, has made a life's work of helping other children discover who they are. So let me say again that we are celebrating the 10th anniversary of this remarkable man and his troupe in Sarasota, Florida, and there will be a big celebratory event on October 29th, and I will be giving you more information about that next week when I play the second half of my interview with Nate and my interview with Leon. So before I close, as I always do, I need to give credit to Josh Hackney, who makes all of my IT requirements happen, possible, and makes the show sound as good as it possibly can. And to tell you, as I always do, that if you need anything that has anything to do with computers or recording or electronics or IT, you want Josh Hackney, and you should go, oh my gosh, I didn't give anything about myself in this show. Ah, well, not a bad thing, but I am going to tell you that you can go on the website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow.com, and you can ask for Josh. Click on email me, and ask me for Josh, or ask me for information about the West Coast Black Theater Troupe, or about myself, and I will give it to you. And so, as always, I really hope that you got something from this show that you can use, something that interested you, or compelled you, or titillated you, or annoyed you, as long as it brings you back. Because I'll be back next week, same time, same station, and I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. My shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's a unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang, no, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang, rising from the ashes. I may be running out of time, but it is